Well, happy Sunday. This is PFG Live, and it's April 7th, and there's snow on the ground outside my window. Welcome aboard. Carl Tauber in the People's Republic of Rhode Island reports 46 degrees Fahrenheit and cloudy, winds 9 out of the northeast. John Thawley reports 61 degrees and sunny with high scattered clouds near Disneyland. Is there any place better? Who else do we got? Warren Jones up near the Concord is sunny, calm winds, mid-40s, and the snow is slowly melting. I can report there's still 2 inches of snush on the snowometer, and it is dripping away. Robert Simpson says it's 61 degrees Fahrenheit near Detroit, but a critical distance away. Let's see, Warren gave us a picture looking out his window. It looks pretty nice. DBX gave us a new P1 logo in honor of the earthquake. Thank you very much, sir. Let's see. WidgetWorks is here. He reports that he has his phone died and he's on his backup. Cloudy and 8 degrees science in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Evils is here. He says in 15 minutes is there an S1. Stay tuned. By the way, that was an earthquake joke in case anybody was, yeah, okay. DBX reports from White Plains at 1356 Zulu. Winds are 330 at 19, gusting 26 knots. Visibility 10 miles. Sky is scattered at 4,000. Broken 5,500. Temperature 05. Dew point minus 01. Altimeter 2976. Remarks. Peak wind was 320 at 27 at 1337 Zulu. And there's some more stuff, which DZ ended. That's drizzle. Drizzle ended 51 minutes after the hour, and more stuff. Josh reports from Charlie, X-ray Mike, Delta. Winds are 100 at 9 knots, gusting 15, temperature 09, dew point minus 02. Remarks, also peak wind, 130 at 17. It's windy out there. Tuck reports 57 degrees fried and sunny in Buffalo, New York. Evils came up with a made-up mitar. That's a new format, by the way. We're getting it standardized. And he reports that it's 23.5 science and 10.3 something because he's very comfortable. Paul Morley has shown up in the Dallas with 67 degrees Fahrenheit at the moment. Nothing but clouds in tomorrow's forecast. Losing hope quickly. I'm sorry. It looks like it's going to be good here. We'll talk more about the incoming eclipse in a few minutes. What else? Here's P2 has a red dot in the middle. That's true. Your mitar did start with mitar, and that is somewhat appropriate. Here in the Windham, New Hampshire, it is currently 45 degrees Fahrenheit, 62% relative humidity, winds out of the north at 8, and the skies are still kind of cloudy. At the Manchester Airport, 7 miles north of me, thereabouts, just ask the helicopters as they go over my head, winds are 360 at 10 knots, visibility 10 miles, broken at 5,000, that's what I'm seeing. Temperature 09, dew point minus 02, altimeter 3003, and the remarks are unimportant. Welcome. It has been one wacky week. So we'll tell you about that in a second. In the Discord server, I would like to welcome DBX, Warren Jones, Tuck, Evils, Lance K, WidgetWorks, Daniel F, Josh, Carl Tauber, Robert Simpson, and Paul Morley. Welcome. A quick bit of news on the Discord server. I'm a little slow on the uptake. Some of you would understand why. There's a thing in Discord where you can boost a server. So if you're a paid subscriber to Discord on a program they call Nitro, which I am because I use it, and you're a Nitro subscriber, you get 2 boosts that you can apply to the server. And So I dumped both of my boosts in. If you reach a 7 boosts, then your server gets some goodies. And amongst the goodies that we're interested in is 1080p streaming and improved audio to 256k, I think. So if any of you out there are a Nitro subscriber and would care to throw a boost at us, we would appreciate it, and it will improve our Discord performance as we stream both to YouTube and to Discord. And let me tell you, doing both at once has made life very interesting. Strange week, because it started with storms. We had the April insult, which was this massive storm, and we were pretty much in it. We got, I can't remember exactly, 7 inches of snow or something, but it didn't start as snow. It started as ice, pellets, rain, freezing stuff. It was bad, and it created many power outages around here. In fact, the thumbnail for this video is a tree across a major power line. If you look closely, that's not a minor power line, that's a major power line, which we came up upon in our truck with, I was driving on a rescue mission with Jared, and we had to turn around and go find another way. Machine New Zealand is here. Welcome aboard. The clocks have changed so you can catch the lives before work. Hey, awesome. Nice to have you here. CJ Stevens says it's 60 and sunny in East Tennessee. Welcome, sir. So we were out of power for 10 hours. Some people were out of power for more, and we feel their pain, and some of them were out of power for less. But it was many trees down. It was the perfect combination, not perfect, but it was a good combination of getting trees nice and icy and then blowing the heck out of them until they go over. So it was pretty bad. So we dig out from the storm. You know, we finish our rescue mission. My buddy who we went to rescue, he lost power. His generator wouldn't start. Dave, I'm looking at you. So I grabbed my son and said, let's go. We're going to go rescue him. We loaded the truck with tools and chainsaw and everything, put our boots on, and we headed out. Had to drive around the felled trees across the road, and we finally got to Dave's house. As we hit his driveway, as we hit the beginning of his driveway, he got power back. So that was good for him, and we kicked his generator and couldn't get it working. And then we headed back home. But eventually we recovered from that. Everybody got power back, and we were all sitting around going, huh, that was, you know, it doesn't get, you know, more annoying than that. And I believe it was Monday morning, and DBX, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was Monday morning, we get on the Discord server, as we do sometimes. We're having our tea, we're having our coffee, and we get on and we schmooze a little bit before getting to work. And I remember we were sitting there and DBX was on the screen, and Ike, Unix Carbide was on the screen. I think WidgetWorks was there. Evil showed up a little later, and we're sitting there, and Unix Carbide, his eyes just went like this, and he says, "We're having an earthquake. I'm leaving." And he stood up and walked out the room. And I'm like, what? So I start typing away on the computer, and I'm like, get me to the earthquake site. And I'm trying to find evidence that there was an earthquake. And at which point DBX says, I just felt it. And he had some wind chimes or something outside. And anyway, stuff was happening, right? Well, sure enough, we reported this earthquake to all our peoples 15 minutes, 20 minutes before the news services had it. But it was Friday? Was it Friday? Maybe it was Friday. I don't remember. But it doesn't matter. It was not good. So we had an earthquake in the last week. As far as I could tell, hey, Robin's here. Welcome aboard, Robin. OC John, welcome aboard. Who else snuck in? Somebody else snuck in. So no damage was reported from this earthquake. Oh, yeah, Bakafish was there, too. So Bakafish is in Tokyo. So he didn't feel anything. But it was crazy. Now, in New York City, you don't get a lot of earthquakes, or at least you don't get a lot of earthquakes that anybody admits to. Many years ago, I was visiting my folks in the apartment in Brooklyn on the 12th floor of a 23-story building. And I'm sitting in my dad's chair looking at the TV, like CRT. And my mom's sitting on the couch knitting. And all of a sudden, the curtains behind the TV started swaying. And I looked up and I turned to my mom. I said, "We're having an earthquake." And she goes, "What are you, crazy?" I'm like, "No, seriously, we're having an earthquake." And the TV we were watching was 5 minutes before the top of the hour at like 6 o'clock, clicks over to the news. And of course, what happens? We're having an earthquake. So it was not my first earthquake in the greater New York City area, but I didn't feel anything here. I reviewed the videos of our surveillance cameras. There was nothing obvious, but a friend of mine, 20 minutes west of me in New Hampshire, felt it sitting in his vehicle. I think Warren, did you feel anything up north of me? Because we didn't feel anything here. At least I couldn't detect anything. So we had an earthquake. And like I said, it nobody got hurt, which was the important thing. Maybe it shook the ice off the trees. Not sure. Paul and Warren are madly typing in the Discord server, so I'm about to get more information. It did show up on the USGS site. So there is a monitoring page on the United States Geophysical Survey. I think I got that right. And they had the data in minutes because it's all automated. And that worked out pretty well. Okay, so geological. Thanks, Robert. United States Geological Survey, USGS.gov. Paul Morley says, any suggestions for the best weather forecast for a large area? Trying to decide which way to drive to give the best chance of viewing tomorrow. I'm in Dallas. In fact, my house is a couple of miles inside the path of totality, but the weather forecast doesn't look good. So there was a site, if somebody could look it up, that had a very good weather map specifically aimed at viewing. And it didn't look good down in Texas, and it looks pretty good up here. So if you got in your vehicle and started driving, I mean, for you, driving to New England is like driving to the other side of Texas, right? Come on up. Warren says, no, I was in Templeton, Mass, and no earthquake felt. However, the neighbors at the quarry where I was working called the office and asked what they were doing. I'm sure it felt like, you know, a blast or something, if you were in the right place. Again, we didn't feel it. So that was the earthquake. It was interesting. And I respect Unix Carbide's reaction to feeling the earthquake and leaving the building in Brooklyn. That was a pretty wise thing to do. And finally, we come to the eclipses. So there's only one eclipse, and it's a coming. I was really seriously considering getting in the vehicle and going somewhere. My kiddo, Jared, is going to Burlington, Vermont with other members of his class they rented a nice coach bus. They're doing it right. And I didn't have the opportunity to go with them, so I was going to drive to someplace. And I had about three targets picked out of places to go. And I was made some very kind offers. You know, come here, you can hang out here and do your thing. But I ultimately, this morning, finally came to the conclusion that I'm not going to go. I'm going to stay put. Okay, so DBX has come up with a link. AccuWeather.com. So if you're in the Discord server, let's see, is Paul? Yeah, Paul's in the Discord server. There you go. Oh, here's a good picture. There is a combination of weather and viewing. Also, weather.gov has a specific page for the 2024 total solar eclipse. There you go. Yeah. Thank you for the help there, DBX and Tuck. That's a good picture. So I'm going to stay home. I decided I will live with 95%. I will send my kiddo to see the 100%. And we'll get a full report from him, I'm sure. This is a screenshot from an app, which I don't remember the name of, but basically it's a sun track. I think it's Sun Tracker or Sun Seeker. And I figured out how to give it the date for tomorrow and what the sun track would be. So this is sitting off the side of my house in a nice spot looking up, and that big red dot in the picture is where all the action will be. So I'm going to stay home, and I'll report back what 95% looks like. There is a chance I will live stream what we see. It's not going to be easy because I don't have a long lens for any video camera setup. But if I could figure something out by tomorrow afternoon, I will have a live feed. I'll have a live feed either way, but it may not be a great shot of the sun. It may just be a live feed of us hanging around watching. So stay tuned for that. It should be interesting. I will remind you that even if you're going to a place where you will be in the path of totality, that before totality, looking at the sun is a bad idea, even though it looks like it's not so bad. But once you hit totality, you can then look at the sun with your bare eyeballs, and then you have a few minutes, and it will be amazing. I have not personally done it, but that's what people are going for. Just be careful. I have used, in the last partial solar eclipse, I used a number 12 welding filter, you know, a 4x5 welding filter, and that was adequate. I've heard talk of number 14s, but I don't have any number 14s. That's kind of dark for most welding, but I had a couple of number 5s, number 12s kicking around, and that works out pretty good. So a welding helmet, highly recommended. Actually, a welding helmet with a number 12 filter is actually a very comfortable way to do it because it blocks out all the extraneous light, and you actually have some pretty comfortable viewing. It's not a bad choice, and you look good while doing it. So between the storms and the earthquakes and the eclipses, we lost some playtime in the shop this week, but we still got some stuff done. Yeah, Tucker says welding helmet without auto darkening. So either a plain Jane, you know, old type welding helmet where you put a number 12 filter in and it's always number 12, or if you have an auto darkening filter, you have to know how to force it to be in auto darkening mode, because if it doesn't auto darken, you're not getting the protection. You are getting UV protection 100% of the time, but you're not getting intensity protection. So Tuck is using the B word, saying otherwise you will be blind. I'm not sure it's that bad. I think once you're behind even an auto darkening, Yeah. So WidgetWorks says the new lids have a grind mode that bypasses auto or cut mode. Right. Except usually those are only like a three or four, level three or four. So I would recommend a level 12 if you can make it happen. If you can't make it happen with your auto darkening helmet, do not use it. Use a go into the toolbox, go find that number 12 filter you never use anymore, and use that one. And that's exactly what I did. So be careful. That's all I'm saying. And by the way, if you had a choice of using a welding filter or one of those $3 film filters in cardboard, use your welding filter. All right. Always use the product made by the company that does not want to be sued. And you'll be okay. So use a proper welding helmet. Last week, when we last met our heroes, I was struggling with hand tapping 4142 pre-hard. And in fact, I have the part I finally made here for show and tell. And if you're on the audio podcast, you're missing out, because here's a nice close-up shot of this part I made, and it came out so nice. So this is, it's all bagged up, and it's got gouge on it, so it doesn't corrode. But that's 4142, nice 5/8-11 tapped hole, and all the good stuff, a flat, two diameters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this was a pain in the neck. 4142 does not like to be tapped. DBX says, I got some glasses that instead of the ISO certification had do not use as sunglasses printed on them. I no longer have them. That's what it's like. You ask the lawyer in the company, what should we do to protect ourselves when we sell these cheap sunglasses? He says, just put on it. Do not use as sunglasses. You'll be all set. Crazy. Anyway, the final success of this, well, let me tell you about the failure. The failure was trying to tap it with a crappy hand tap that of unknown provenance. That was failure number one. Buying a carbide single point threading tool for the lathe and then holding it poorly. So you may have heard me diss the design of the Redline tool that I bought, because it had a very short shank. And when I say short, I mean it was like maybe 3/4 of an inch long. I don't think it was an inch. And I'm like, how do they expect you to hold the shank when the tool is sticking out like 2 1/4 inches? So I took a regular old tool holder that had the V notch in the bottom. So it was I think it was a Schar's. In fact, it was the Schar's that I had reground months and months ago. If you follow me, you may remember that. So it was nice and square. And I put it in the V groove and I put the set screw on top of it. Only one set screw can fit. And I tightened it up and I'm like, boy, that's nice and snug. No, it wasn't. What was I thinking? So as soon as it got some rotational, some pressure on it, it very happily bent, elastically, but bent the tool holder, and because the V wasn't very deep. So it had lots of leverage, tons of leverage, and it worked terribly. I believe that was the cause of the tool failing. It got chipped, and that was the end of that. So, what do we call that, DBX? What? P what? That was P1. And we got the McMaster car catalog out, and we ordered a couple of new hand taps. And I could read your mind, WidgetWorks. No, I did not get a gun tap. I couldn't find a gun tap. So what is a gun tap? A gun tap is sometimes called a spiral nose tap. It's confusing because there's spiral flute taps, spiral point. Thank you. So it's also known as a gun tap, spiral point tap. That means that the cutting edge is shaped and it's pushing the chip in front of the tap. So if you have, generally, if you have a clear through hole, it's the better tap to use. And as you tap it, it pushes the chips forward. A spiral flute tap kind of at first glance looks like a drill in that it has a spiral flute. It, as you tap, drives the chips out the back, which is cool. And that is useful for a blind hole. And then there's hand taps, where the cutting surfaces are parallel to the axis of the hole, and the chips accumulate in the grooves along the, in the clearance grooves along the tap. And that's called a hand tap. The hand tap is the strongest of, I shouldn't say that. The hand tap is stronger than spiral flute because of all the material removed from the tap to make the spiral flutes. Robert Simpson says a spiral point tap is made of sadness. Okay, now I'm confused. Spiral flute. So spiral flute taps are made of sadness. Yeah, they're generally weaker because you've... yeah, no problem. I got you. I got you, Robert. They're weaker because of all the material you remove from the tap. On the other hand, they're flinging their chips out the back, which might be what you need for your CNC process, for example. And you do what the AI tells you to do. Right. Moving on. So I got a couple of hand taps. McMaster Card didn't have a gun tap. Or I didn't find it in 5/8-11. So I got a plug tap and a taper tap, hand tap. So what that means, plug tap is sort of the generic, if you get a generic hand tap, it's probably going to be what we call a plug tap. There's 2 to 3 threads that are tapered in the front. A taper tap has double or more threads tapered in the front, and theoretically it's an easier starting, easier running tap. And that is the tap that I used to tap this part. I held the part in the lathe. I held the lathe chuck with an adjustable wrench on the jaws, and I held the back of the tap with another little wrench, and I basically two-handed it and drove that thing in with the secret ingredient. Now, if you've been following me, you know what the secret ingredient is. Anybody want to put that in the chat? Do you remember what the secret ingredient is? Molly D. Evils is on it. Correctamundo. And Tuck got it. Molly D. WidgetWork says love. But wouldn't you agree that Molly D is love? I think so. So back in the day, I was on I was very active on Practical Machinist forum, and there some humor got developed on Practical Machinist, and one of the bits of humor was about Molly D, and it was said, and I believe this, it was said that if you took a drop of Molly D and you put it on the work in the right place, it will drill and tap the hole for you. That's how good Molly D is. Nate Van Clay said, did I get your name right? Says, it's the best. It is the best. Robin says, Molly D plus Bow Lube is double love. It's true. Although I don't like the smell of Molly D. It takes a while to get off your hands. But I'll tell you what, there ain't nothing better. So Molly D plus a hand tap, a brand new, sharp, nice hand tap in the taper variety is what got me through this 4142. It was no fun at all. Now, the reason I used the hand tap is because my other tool that I also ordered did not come yet, and I'm very tempted to remake this part as an exercise using the next tool that I'm going to describe to you, because you've learned how to make a tapped hole using a hand tap, but now you're going to hear the rest of the story. So, what is it called? Jokisch 897 paste? Fine quality German schmoo? Never heard of it. I wonder what's in it. Probably molybdenum disulfide, which is what's in Molly D. So, I did order another single point threading tool, internal threading tool. I was going to do this in the first place, and I decided to save some money. Have you ever heard that before? So I said, screw it. I'm going to get the single point tool that I should have bought in the first place. I have a micro 100 tool holder all set up for their quarter inch shank tools. They're kind of miniature little tools. They're great. And their claim to fame is, besides being a very nice tool, that you can take out a tool, put in a new tool, and it is registered within a tenth. And it is. And it's a cool system, and it works great, and I've used it. It's wonderful. However, I needed to get the 1/2 inch tool holder and the very long 1/2 inch single point threading tool, and it was not cheap. I mean, if you need it, it's not expensive, but I decided it was an investment and I need to prove the point, so to speak. And I went ahead and ordered it. So the tool itself was on the order of, and I just want to put a disclaimer in here. I don't have to do this. The job's done. Look, job done, right? But I want to do this because I want to, I need to slay this dragon. So that's why I spent the shekels. So the tool itself is capable of 2-inch depth, I think. It requires a 1/2-inch hole, and it is the 1/2-inch shank, a micro 100 shank to go into their quick change tool holder. Then I ordered the quick change tool holder. I think my total bill for that mission was about $350. Little painful, but worth it. I also, and I have a little show and tell, I got a Schar's kit. This is their boring tool holder. So there's the 3/4-inch hole for the tool holder that's coming. So this will be dedicated. By the way, the Schar's part number on this, if you're playing at home, is 250-304. Oh, and there's another number. This is like some other number, 230-4042. So one of those two numbers will lead you to this Schar's boring bar holder. Hashtag not sponsored. So that is going to receive the tool holder from the micro 100, the 1/2-inch, and that will live. Those will live together forever. And then we're going to try it again. I believe that will work 100 times better than what I had set up. And I will have paid my tuition. So I will report back. But the Micro 100 tools, also hashtag not sponsored, are really sweet. So can't recommend them enough. My friend Adam, MHM Machining, he turned me on to those tools, and I'm happy he did. They were really super. So I'll have the 1/2-inch set up, and I'll have the 1/4-inch set up, and we'll be very happy. So that's the story. So the part is done, and DBX is the recipient of this part. It's coming. I will stamp my maker's mark on it and get it out to you, and we'll do a little lasering, and we'll get it out to you. We're going to have a little fun with it. By the way, this is part of a project that DBX is doing for his lathe. Nate Van Clay says, "Those boring bars changed my life." I believe you. They are pretty cool. Widgeworks thinks that bacon grease is in the Jokisch 897, which might be true. But it's not kosher for Passover, so we're not going to talk about bacon grease today.
Bacon grease.
So the next thing that got a lot of brain cycles,
you know, when I look over at the Discord server and it says Robin is typing, I have to pause. Greenwood AG says, which tool supplier do you use to procure your Micro 100 tools? Oh, I have a story about that. Robin, I'll get down to you in a second. But first of all, let me tell you about my supplier. If you go to buy Micro 100 tools, you can't buy it direct. Now, in this day and age, we're used to like going online, going, bup, 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 give me my stuff, and here it comes. Micro 100 will only sell through a distributor. So there's a distributor down the street from me, literally. And I had an account with them, you know, a couple of years ago, and I haven't done much with them. And I said, by the way, it's Blackhawk. Blackhawk Tools, I think. And I said, well, I'll give them the business, right? So when you go to the Micro 100 site, you can make what they call a shopping cart. Of course, it's not a shopping cart. It's just a cart. And then when you're all done, you tell them to send it to the distributor. So I did that. And then, you know, again, we're kind of used to getting our stuff pretty quick. 24 hours later, I had nothing, like no email, no nothing. And I picked up the phone and I called the number and I got this person, this very nice person. I said, hey, I placed an order with Micro 100. They shot it over to you. I need to know where it is because I need to move on this. And this very nice person went tack it, tack it, tack, and said, what's the name of the company again? I gave her the name of the company again. Tack, tack, tack. Oh, I said, you know what? Let me get more information and I'll get back to you. Okay. 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 Have a great day. Bye. Click. And I immediately went to MSC. It turns out that you can get it through MSC. Anyway, long story short, no, not MSC. I take that back. Oh, now you got to make me look it up. It wasn't MSC, I don't think. It was the other one, the West Coast supplier that American Tool? No, I think it's like called American Tool. Ah, I'm sorry, I forgot. But anyway, I went over there and made the connection. Bang, bang, bang. My stuff is on the way. Not Travers. I'll find out. I'll post it to Instagram. But order placed, stuff on the way, and it's coming. No, it's the place I learned about from Bar Z. He liked them. He bought all of his wheels from them. So anyway, but I was kind of disappointed in that whole experience with the guys. Oh, and she says to me, "Well, we're a national company," and I'm like, "Really?" So. Dealing with my local office didn't seem like it was too local anymore, so I gave up. Tools are on the way. Video to follow. However, Robin says, ultra micro grain carbide from Centennial Carbide is as good or better than Micro 100, but you have to grind the tool. Yes. So that's good to know. Ultra micro grain carbide from Centennial Carbide. Excellent. We'll have to do that. If I knew somebody with a grinder, that could be fun. But I wanted something ready to go, and Micro 100 really has treated me well over the years. Evils asks, do we have a test procedure specification for evaluating purple markers? I don't know. Robin, what do you think? Is there an ISO number on that? Peter Stanton approved. Well, that's it then. If Peter says it's okay, it's okay. I like his stuff. So we need to develop a purple marker certification process because Evils has three different purple markers. We consider the Sharpie purple marker to be the standard. So you're going to have to judge against the purple Sharpie marker.
Anyway, we'll keep you posted on that, but I'm pretty sure that my tool stiffness will improve with the Micro 100 tools. Please, no comments. Warren Jones says, a friend of mine in Peterborough is a Micro 100 dealer. Well, how come my phone's not ringing? Put us together. We need to talk. Seriously, I would love to keep the business local. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Peterborough, not too far away. If you were around yesterday, you may have noticed that we did a random live, and that started, it was 8 o'clock at night. And it started because I did a whole bunch of technical changes to my setup here, and I kind of wanted to ring it out. The punchline is that it helped a lot. We discovered a few things, I made a few tweaks, and things are working very nicely. And we learned a few fixes for some bugs, which we don't have full understanding of, but we know how to get around it. But that turned into an hour and a quarter podcast last night with my kiddo, Sam. And Sam, as you know, is an artist. And somehow we got onto the topic of AI. Well, if you want to instigate some vigorous conversations about AI, talk to some artists, because holy cow, they have an opinion. So Sam and I went, we kind of bantered a little bit about it. And it was very interesting to hear the viewpoint of artists with respect to AI. And then in our chat room, of course, we had machinists, and machinists had an opinion about AI. And it was pretty interesting. Even in my other world of antenna design, we have this thing. For a long time, we had optimization routines, right? You would design an antenna, and you would say, I'm going to put a knob on this parameter, you know, length. I'm going to put a knob on this parameter, dielectric constant. I'm going to put a knob on this parameter, spacing. And then we're going to optimize the design based on these requirements. One requirement is matching. Another requirement is gain. Another requirement is efficiency. Whatever. And then you can create pretty complicated requirements. And then you would say, go. And it would do its thing. And different optimization algorithms had different levels of complexity. But they were basically borderline generative AI. You can make the argument. If today's AI has the equivalent of, you know, a billion neurons, this was the equivalent of 1,000 neurons. So we were generating stuff. Well, at some point, do I have the book handy? At some point, somebody wrote a paper that said, well, we're going to use generative optimization. I think it was a genetic algorithm to design an antenna and it optimize it. So it designed this antenna, and it was a sort of a ground plane antenna, and it had some requirements, and it ended up looking like a bent, you know, like you gave somebody a paperclip and told them they had to make 5 bends in it and randomly. That's what it looked like. And my friend John Krause, may he rest in peace, wrote essentially a rebuttal to that design, and basically said, well, any competent antenna designer would look at that and kind of say, I bet you we could do that with a short spiral antenna or a short helical antenna. And then he proceeded to design the short helical antenna. And what do you know? The short helical antenna kind of looked like the generated antenna in its gross structure, only it worked better. So the human said, oh yeah, I know what this needs, and went ahead and designed it better and got a better result than the computer. Now, this was two decades ago, right? So this was before, like I said, this was the equivalent of 1,000 neurons versus 1 billion neurons. But I think the same argument is obvious today in that, you know, AI, and there's two flavors of it, but AI is going to do some things really well, and we're thankful for it. And some things it's going to do, and it's going to look like the jankiest crap you've ever seen. And I could do better than that. Well, yes, you can. And we had a very good debate about this. And if you're curious, that video is up. It's not like these videos. It's not specifically aimed at machinists and engineers. But we had an interesting discussion. One day it will be better than it is today. And it'll be, you know, like it's 100 million or 10 million times better than it was a couple of decades ago. It's going to be, you know, another billion times better than it is today. And that will be, in fact, pretty scary. But what does it mean to us as engineers and machinists and toolmakers? The question I put up on the screen was, will AI design and machine your parts? And that's a really fair question. I think the answer is it's a tool, and it's just another one of your tools in the toolbox. And for a bunch of us, we don't know how to use it. We just don't know how to use it. I went to ChatGPT-4. In fact, I pay a subscription for ChatGPT-4. And I wanted to figure out how useful this would be. And I had a problem to solve. It was not a customer problem. It was I wanted to design a filter that was going to help me with a GPS receiver system. So I said, you know what? Here's a perfect example. I'll go to the AI and I will say, help me design this filter. And here's what happened. I said, you create a prompt. A prompt is, you know, presentation of the problem to the AI. I said, we're going to design a filter for GPS, and here are the requirements. I want it to have a stop band from here to here. I want it to have a pass band from here to here. I want it to have another stop band. It should be used this topology, this technology. These are the requirements. Go. And here's what it did. It said, filters are very important. Generally, when you design a filter, you would do step A, step B, and step C. And frequently, you would use software to design that filter. I'm shortening it just a little bit. But it's like, thank you for your answer. That was not the question. So, it was useless to solve this problem. And one of the reasons it was useless to solve this problem is that ChatGPT is what we call a large language model. What that means is it absorbs a whole bunch of language, of information, and then it regurgitates things either from the information or in the form that it learned from the information. And sometimes it does surprising things and puts things together and comes up with interesting, you know, conclusions. But a large language model has to start with a database. And the biggest complaint that the artists have about AI is that it's sucking up all of the available information, you know, from the internet, and then trying to process it. Yeah, right. Robert Simpson says a glorified chatbot reading an FAQ in this context. The artists are saying, well, it's sucking up all of our information, meaning all of our creative stuff, and then it's generating some new stuff without giving us credit, okay, or paying us for stuff that we expected to be paid for. And it's a fair question. So if you go to the companies that are working on AIs and have like OpenAI,
which is not so open, and you say, what training material did you use to train this AI? Companies like Google are going to be kind of circumspect. You're not going to get a straight answer. And that's where they consider their secret sauce. But basically, it's if you've ever published anything on the internet in your lifetime, it's in that database. So that's called a large language model. Then you have generative AI, which is essentially starting from scratch. Robert Simpson posted, this new data poisoning tool lets artists fight back against generative AI. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Plenty of good stuff to read. That's from Technology Review, which is an MIT spinoff. It's interesting. So, personal opinion, I think in the design, machining, making of tools and parts, I think AI is going to be a tool in the toolbox. I do not think it's going to replace you. But I think Bacafish brought it up. Like CNC came in and scared all the manual machinists. Now here comes AI, right? It's similar. It's a powerful tool. I have no idea how it's going to be applied effectively yet. I am sure within the next 6 months, somebody is going to show this bicycle was completely designed and machined by AI. Okay. I know that's coming. It may have already happened, but I do not think it replaces human ingenuity, human intuition, and experience, especially experience, because I don't know of any AI that destroyed a tool because it wasn't being held correctly in a lathe. And now you know how humans learn. All right. So once again, I want to recognize Widget Works and Josh for donating a boost to the server. They are both Discord Nitro users. Thank you very much. And if anybody else is a Discord Nitro user and you want to boost the server, we're looking for one more boost. Oh, wait, we got it. Oh, thank you. Who boosted us? I will find out and I will say a formal thank you. I just looked at the little box and it says we're at level 3. Thank you. Yay. So the next time the Homer as a bicycle. Awesome. Yeah, then the next time you see us on Discord, guys, we will have, I don't think it'll like automatically switch our stream. We'll have 1080p streaming and better audio. Whoever did that, thank you very much. I only see one purple diamond in the chat, so I don't know who did the last push. Pixel did it. Thank you, Pixel. Pixel, you're awesome. I appreciate it. So we're there. We're at eight boosts, and next time we will have better video on Discord. Thank you very much. Greenwood says, how long until Elon or other succeeds with the fusion of human and AI? Well, I know that Elon or one of his subsidiary companies has a project going with a human brain interface. And they're doing this under the umbrella of helping people with neurological disorders. I'm sure that somebody is going to go down that road. Good question. I don't know. But if you've spent any time, and I recommend you do, by the way, if you have a chance, playing with AI, trying to make it do something useful, you will quickly be very happy that it is not connected to your brain. Because it's a little weird. And also for those people that think AI happened in the last couple of years, it was 1979 as a freshman at MIT when my buddy invited me up to the AI lab at MIT.
So now at MIT, there's computer science. They fused computer science and AI and AI. AI was a product of the media lab at MIT, and computer science was computer science. Now it's called CSAIL, the computer science and AI lab. Okay, I can't even understand that right now, but there's something funny in the chat. Ghost in the Shell. AI has been happening since long before I showed up as a freshman in 1979. That's the point. So this has been worked on. The basics of what you're seeing in AI has been known for a long time. What hasn't been available is the insane compute power and we'll just call it compute power that is available today. That's what enabled what you're seeing in the new AI tools. But the concepts, even the designs, existed back then. But they said, well, we'll never be able to make something this big. Well, stand by. Here it is. Well, guys, it's question time. We've got 4 minutes left to the top of the hour. Throw your questions in the chat, and we'll see if we can't get them answered. And if we can't get them answered, we'll make them up. Oh, yeah. Thank you, DBX. See, this is why we have human brain cells working on this. DBX, Tuck came up with a solution to a problem, which I want to share with you. WidgetWorks says video games made high-power graphics cards that made crazy compute possible, so it's all because of video games. You are not wrong, sir. I do an antenna simulation on this crazy GPU that would not have existed if it weren't for gaming. Please stand by while we bring you Tuck, and we're going to learn a few things here. Tuck, welcome aboard Buffalo, New York. You're on the air.
Hey, Spencer. What's going on?
Hey, so Tuck.
What I have
how are
here
you?
Is a solution for some collet-holding organization, which the original solution I found was made by Go Manufacturing. He made these awesome printed collet holders that have this very unique stacking feature, very aesthetically pleasing, which I took the design and I made it a little bit bigger from ER20 to these DA180s, which fit perfectly and stack great. And one of the things that I found really nice about them, because I started printing out a few of these to test to make sure everything was working right,
P1
was to make sure that when they stacked, if I can get this correct, they aren't load bearing on the chamfer. There's actually a little flat there, so when they sit, they actually sit really secure and very stable to the point where I can try moving this around, pick it up, drop it down. Typically it doesn't fall over, but it does a great job of staying right where it is, and I can organize all my collets as I need them.
It's a nice design.
Oh,
very
shout
nice.
Out to Go Manufacturing, because I used his original design but then created my own.
Which so I assume the top face was down on the bed?
Correct.
And then how'd you do the windows?
It actually prints all of this out with supports.
Okay.
Like this.
So, and then just pop out the supports in the windows?
Yep.
That's really nice. I like that. So one of the tricks I do to avoid the whole, you know, supports, which looks like it did a great job, is I make diamond shaped windows so that it could print it without supports.
So instead of the nice aesthetic radius, you put big chamfers. I got you.
Yeah. The ultimate chamfer. Very nice. Cool.
Yeah, so I will also be posting these up on my page for Bamboo. So if you check out Tuck's Garage on the Bamboo site, these will be up there shortly. So
excellent.
If anybody wants them, I'm probably going to do ER32 as well. So, because for me, that's a much more common size. I will be making these for that size as well.
WidgetWorks says, why not just ditch the windows and go with four legs?
I think that this looks better.
That is a
personally, I think it just looks better. That's it.
Well, for your the way you're stacking them, I think you have to go with the design you have, because otherwise the legs would splay. I think that's the answer there, WidgetWorks. But that's lovely. That's very nice. Thanks for sharing, man. I mean, if you
thanks for bringing me on, Spencer.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Bamboo, what's the name of the Bamboo Labs print sharing site? I can't remember.
Maker World.
Maker World. So Tuck's Garage
MakerWorld.com. And if you search Tuck _ Garage, you will find me. And I already have a few things I've got up there.
Okay, cool.
But
and we'll try to get that in the show notes on the YouTubes. Thank you, sir, for sharing. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Spencer.
Awesome. I think he earned a doink. Doink. There we go. WidgetWorks says, as long as they're stiff enough, he's not bearing on the chamfer. Yep, it's true. I'm not going to run into the lab, but I did something for screwdrivers that is what you're describing, WidgetWorks, which is just like four legs. And that worked out. Oh, the link, DBX put the link right in Discord. It's makerworld.com/en/@tuck_garage. Nice. Thanks, guys. What else do we have on the agenda here today before we wrap it up? I don't think I have anything. I think everything else has been pretty good. I do have one thing to report. I'll do it really quick. It turns out that the technology known as MagSafe, like for phone cases, here is an example of a MagSafe case on my iPhone and a MagSafe little puck that connects to it. Other examples include, various chargers where your phone just attaches to it magnetically. And that whole system is called MagSafe, which is a trademark. Well, I theorized that after getting enough information, finally, that the MagSafe case is going to improve the coupling to an inductive charger, such as the one in my Ford F-150, which is terrible. And in fact, I got a brand new case, same as I had before, except this one had the MagSafe ring in it, and it absolutely improved it and made it usable from having been unusable. So if you're out there and you're going to buy a case for your phone and you're not sure if you should get the MagSafe case because you don't use the MagSafe, get the MagSafe case and it will work. Did you tell me that? So there's reasons I learned this in the end, but it was a tough lesson. And I am now a big, happy MagSafe customer. Little tidbit that might help you. With that, I'm going to say thanks for being here. On the PFG Live. If you haven't already, you can go pick up your PFG stones at pfgstones.com. Actually, that points at the information page. Little update on status. All the 4-inchers got done and shipped and in stock. We have some in stock. And I am not sure what's up next on the docket. We have some 6-inchers going out, but they're in stock. WidgetWork says, don't forget to like and subscribe. Did you know that about 2/3 of you that are watching this YouTube video are not subscribed? Subscribe to the channel. The advantage is you'll be notified as to when these lives and our regular videos will be happening. We will be hand lapping. I didn't talk about that today because I didn't have much to talk about. We'll be hand lapping the Toolmaker's Flat next, and that will be the subject of a full-length video. The short version of that is we'll be sticking with the last process that we developed, which was for the 3-micron diamond. We will start with that on the Toolmaker's Flat. So right now I'm working on just logistics, trays and storing laps and doing all that kind of stuff. And then we'll be showing off the hand lapping. That's coming. So thanks for being here. Thank you very much to Pixel for giving us the last boost on the Discord server. It should be interesting to see how things look going forward. We'll see you next week at the regular time. Tomorrow's the eclipse. Don't forget to post your stories and your pictures, and keep our channel in mind, because I may be live streaming whatever we can live stream tomorrow from New Hampshire. With that, have an awesome weekend, what's left of it, and an awesome week, and get flat and stay flat, and we'll see you later.